Hello, everyone. Terrific Tuesday to you. I'm Coy Wyatt. This is CNN 10, and you are awesome. We have a great show for you today, so let's get to it. We're going to begin with the latest news on the protests in Israel. For the past 11 weeks, on Saturday nights, protesters have taken to the streets in Israel to call for a government overhaul. Roughly 500,000 Israelis each week voicing their opposition to the government. That's 5% of the total population. Protesters are angry at the government's plans to overhaul the country's judicial system, which would give Israel's parliament the power to overrule Supreme Court decisions. Critics accuse Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of pushing the legislation in order to get out of a corruption trial that he is currently facing. But Netanyahu denies that, saying that the trials are collapsing on their own and that the government overhaul is necessary. On Monday, though, Netanyahu announced a key change to part of his plans due to the massive public protests and international pressure. The concession would give Israeli governments less power to select new judges, but still more power than it has now. About 66% of Israelis believe the Supreme Court should have the power to strike down laws incompatible with Israelis' basic laws, and about the same proportion, 63%, say they support the current system of nominating judges.
As surely as night follows day, Saturday night these past 11 weeks in Israel has meant mass demonstrations against the government's judicial overhaul. Protesters are concerned it will remove pretty much all checks and balances on the government, allowing it to appoint allies as top judges, and removing the Supreme Court's ability to strike down laws, except in very narrow circumstances. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who leads the most right-wing and religiously conservative government in Israel's history, says his overhaul is required to restore the balance between the government and the judiciary. But the protesters don't buy it. They worry it will erode Israel's claim to be a liberal democracy, and that will damage the economy and infringe upon their freedoms of expression, worship, and the right to demonstrate. President Isaac Herzog's attempts to broker a compromise unveiled earlier this week were rejected by the government, and though his warnings of civil war seem far-fetched for now, so long as the overhaul continues its passage through Parliament, the protests will continue.
Now for another installment of our CNN series, Call to Earth. We're traveling to Sydney, Australia, where one organization called Living Seawalls is changing the way we think about building infrastructure in the ocean. Experts are engineering seawalls to create critical habitats that are more hospitable to marine life that grows there. We're going to hear from marine experts who believe it's just as important to save the little creatures in the ocean as it is the big ones.
I started getting into marine science when I was in my 20s and was doing a lot of scuba diving. I was really interested in the tiny critters that were living in the marine environment. There's a lot of attention with biodiversity and conservation around the large fish like the sharks and the whales, but you have to remember that these organisms rely on smaller organisms in order to survive. We really need to start at the bottom and build up a really strong base on which to build up this food web. My name is Dr. Aria Lee, and I'm the project manager for Living Seawalls. The problem in urbanised areas such as Sydney Harbour is that so much of the shoreline has been built over with artificial structures. Over 50% of the shoreline in Sydney Harbour has some sort of structure built upon it, whether it be a seawall, wharf or pontoon. And these artificial structures have taken away the sort of microhabitats like rock pools, crevices, tiny holes that you would see on a natural rocky shoreline. So what Living Seawalls is doing is bringing back these natural habitat features to an artificial structure such as a seawall. We as marine ecologists went out and identified features of a natural shoreline that are missing from a flat featureless seawall, and we've translated that onto a Living Seawalls panel. The panels are designed digitally, and then a prototype is 3D printed. There are currently 14 living seawall sites around Sydney, and around the entire world, we've installed over 1,000 living seawalls habitat panels. We can certainly see the difference that the living seawalls panels make. The textures can provide seaweed a really strong hold onto the surface. And that's extremely valuable for all the marine organisms that rely on the kelp, not just for protection and for homes, but as a food source. When there is a new construction, we want the designers to think about how they can design the structure to benefit both humans and the natural environment. Right now, seawalls are really only useful for humans. They stop erosion, they protect the property that's behind it. What we want to do in the future is think about what the marine environment needs as well as what humans need, and that way we can build more sustainably for the future.
10-second trivia. The childhood home of which fictional character was located at 4 Privet Drive? Sherlock Holmes, Charlie Brown, Harry Potter, or Katniss Everdeen? Set mostly in a fictional Britain, Harry Potter lived at his muggle home at 4 Privet Drive. And for today's story, getting a 10 out of 10, we're traveling far from the British movie studios that produced The Wonderful World of Harry Potter to Japan, where fans will be able to immerse themselves in some of the series' most iconic moments at our parent company's Warner Brothers Studio Tour Tokyo, The Making of Harry Potter. Did you know the Harry Potter book series has sold a record 500 million copies and has been translated into at least 88 different languages?
Harry Potter's magic,
you're a wizard, Harry,
is transporting to Tokyo. It's on this massive lot where fans will see some of the series' most iconic sets, like the Great Hall at Hogwarts and the Forbidden Forest. It's part of the new Warner Brothers studio, soon to open in Japan.
What goes through your mind when you see the train, you see the sets, you see the costumes?
Wow. I can't believe it. And when I come here, I have to remember that I'm here on a business trip and not to be looking at this as if I'm just a fan.
Jeff Nagler is president of Warner Brothers' worldwide studio operations.
Why Japan?
I think that was one of the easiest decisions for us, actually, because of the whole global interest in Harry Potter after the United States and after the UK. Japan is the third best area for Harry Potter fandom.
The Tokyo studio is modeled after the one in London and will be larger. A big draw, the Hogwarts Express train that was made in London, transported by land and by sea to its new home here in Japan.
It's not just about the sets, it's about the accessories, the costumes, the props, like the ones you've seen in the movies.
We normally don't get to see what goes on behind the scenes in movies, but here we get to see how films get made. For example, it shows us how the people who work in the costume, props, movie set departments all work as a team.
A glimpse into movie magic far from Harry Potter's roots in the UK.
Do you see Asia as a growth market for experiences like this?
Absolutely. We do look at China, and we look at Japan, we look at South Korea. We have a big fan base in Australia and New Zealand as well. It's not Asia, it's the whole Asia-Pacific region.
Stories of imagination appealing to audiences around the world.
That's all we have time for now. Wherever you go today, be awesome. Do everything with excellence in mind. Remember, how you do the little things, that determines how well prepared you'll be for life's biggest moments. My favorite part of the day now, I want to give a special shout out to Osceola High School in Osceola, Missouri. We see you. Go out and be awesome, y'all. I'm Coy Wire, and we are CNN 10.